Let's really think about how you can show your strengths in a way that honors you, but also communicates authority. So, even reducing certain words like I think, or maybe, or perhaps, or probably, those are things that signal lower confidence. And people who want to be seen as more confident or be seen in that leadership role have more definitive language that they're using.
Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Jeanine Ledford, your host and the creator of the groundbreaking concept of intercultural creativity, which is the intersection of creative thinking and cultural competence. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. We have exciting guests in all types of fields who highlight how creative thinking best thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow Rich podcast. I'm so excited to be with you today. I have another amazing guest, a guest that is a big part of intercultural creativity because communication is a big part of intercultural creativity. I have with me Miss Monique Russell, who's a communications expert, and she wants to be on your team. She teaches women leaders and teams how to have positive and productive relationships at home and work using effective communication tools and strategies. She has worked with organizations like Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and the Center for Disease Control and Verizon. And she has over 20 years of experience in the science of communication and leads Clear Communication Solutions, an international training, coaching, and consulting firm that focuses on confidently communicating from the inside out. She is the author of the book, The Ultimate Speaker's Guide, and she's also the author of the book called Intentional Motherhood, Who Said It Would Be Easy? Definitely have to talk about that one. And she's the host of Bridge to You podcast. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast, Miss Monique.
Hi, Janine.
So wonderful to have you here. So I gave a small background about you. If you could just reintroduce yourself to the guests, and then we'll just jump right into all things intercultural creativity.
Absolutely. And so I'm really grateful to be here. I grew up in the beautiful islands of the Bahamas and also Nigeria. I live here in the United States in Atlanta, Georgia with my husband, and I have two boys. So talk about creativity. I mean, my life experiences require it. I run a consultancy and I focus on communication skills and leadership skills that help people to have great relationships at home and at work. So if you are looking to tell your story, looking to build confidence or rediscover who you are, working with me is what you want to do.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I am all about intercultural creativity, and a big part of creative thinking and creative ideation is communication. When you think about what it means to be alive, it means to communicate your ideas, right? And transfer information from one brain to another brain, from one mind to another. What does communication mean to you? What does good communication look like?
Well, I would say what makes it effective is that the person that you're trying to connect with or trying to have a dialogue, whether it's verbal or nonverbal, because we do a lot of communicating without words, it becomes effective when the intention or the desire that you had when you transmitted your communication lands effectively with the person that you intend to receive it. So it really allows us to pay attention to timing, environment, moods, changes, cultures, words. And there are so many things, there's so many nuances in that process of communication and being open to know that you're never going to get everything right. Perfection doesn't exist. It's almost like a dance. If you're dancing salsa and you're moving to the left and you're moving to the right and trying to be very much aware of the person who's on the other side that you're trying to connect with.
And a big part of cultural competency is that ability to observe with complexity and observational skills. Who woke up this morning and said, I'm going to do 15 minutes of observational training, like no one ever, right? Or just curiosity training
or things like that. Yet it's such an integral part in how we connect with one another. And so what things can people do to enhance their observational skills so they can enhance their creativity and their communication?
I would say this is the perfect time that we're in right now. I always recommend, especially for those who are in leadership roles, to be very intentional about seeking out mentors, seeking out cultural mentors for the cultures of the people that they are leading on their team, which is an absolute must, or the cultures that are represented in their client base or in their company. And this is just going to allow them to have deeper connection, a deeper understanding, deeper dialogue. So select a mentor, someone who can educate you from their perspective on the beautiful things, the challenging things, the cultural practices, the norms, what's normal, what's not, what to do in their culture, so that you have an understanding of how things may come across when you're conducting business, when you're doing presentations or making introductions, or even giving your contribution.
Ah, that's so good. Mentorship is so important. Sponsorship is so important. And being able to know how communication changes. So when you're culturally competent, you're able to perspective shift and to adjust your behavior in different cultural situations. When I say culture, I don't just mean ethnicity, but just different groups of people, different lived experiences and values and beliefs that may shift. If this is shifting, that means our communication dialogue may be shifting. For example, I wouldn't speak to my CEO the same way that I speak to my three-year-old, yet I'm still me. What does authentic communication look like? Like, how do you maintain and retain your authenticity, but you're able to shift and to adapt your communication strategies with different cultural groups?
This one is so complex because I feel people use the word authentic to say that they just want to say what they want to say, how they want to say it, without any regard for the time, the environment, the context. Communication without context, words without context, is dangerous. So we always have to think about what is the context and how can we make sure that this message that's being communicated is appropriate for the context. I would challenge everyone who feels like they are being threatened with their authenticity or they feel like they're not being who they are to really consider what that means for themselves. Is it that you feel afraid that you're not sharing a valuable contribution that you want to share? Or is it that you want to be able to communicate without any regard whatsoever for who's in the room, how you feel, because then that would actually be the lazy approach. If you are becoming a master communicator, if you want to be an effective communicator who most people want to be around, then it's going to be critical for you to begin to practice navigating in and out. Look at it as a game, really. You're always going to be who you are. Just as you gave that example, Janine, like you talking to your CEO versus talking to your three-year-old, you're still the same person. Nothing about you has changed. You're still authentic. It's just the method of delivery and the word choices are different. Mm-hmm. So when people say that they want to be their authentic selves, I think the term is so broad that we have to start from a clear definition or a clear point when we use that term. What exactly do you mean by authenticity? You know, so to really think about what it is that they're hoping to get across, and then being very intentional and aware of the environment, aware of the time, aware of the language. A lot of times we get stuck, not on how to say it, but even just what to say. So for example, I was speaking with a colleague and she had overextended herself. And she said, I've overcommitted. I've overextended. I need to find a way to get out of some of these commitments. I mean, what do I say? If it's someone that is new coming into the scene or coming on into the practice, the way that she would say it is very clear. She didn't have to think about it. There's no extended thought process. But because there was already a relationship that was established, the question was, okay, now how do I say this in a way that maintains the relationship where I don't feel so uncomfortable? So I would definitely say it's how to say it.
Let's go there, because I want people to have a few applicable tools. You don't have to give all your tricks, but that's a huge thing for me, because I did have an episode of wanting to say yes. And especially as I was building this business and really sharing the term intercultural creativity, I'm like, whoever wants to put me on their stage, just yes, I'll do it. Whoever needs me to speak via Zoom, I'll do it. You need me to talk to 10-year-olds, I'll do it. You know,
who are just you out there everywhere.
Yes. And just, yeah, people are like, oh my goodness. But I reached a point where it's catching on, you know, it's taking off. I'm starting to get really good gigs to talk about intercultural creativity, but now I need to manage my time and watch my calendar and not let the world book my calendar. And like I said before, I have a son and a family, so I have to be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about your book, because I'm so excited to get to that. But someone told me, maybe I say phrases like, I'm really excited about your project, but as of now, I don't think I could commit what your project is looking for right now. And I just had a few phrases that I needed to use to say, how do I say no in a polite way? And then I heard some people say, no is a complete sentence. You don't have to give an explanation. You could just say no. So I understand both of those, but I'm the type of person where like, I don't want to offend the person. Do you have any tips that people can do?
Absolutely, I do. And so let's first start with the no is a complete sentence, because that's actually something I wrote about in my book, Intentional Motherhood. Okay. No is a complete sentence, but it is how you say it and how it's delivered. Put yourself in the other person's shoe. If someone just said no to you, how would you feel? Would you refer them? Would you go back to them? Would you connect them with anyone? Would you make introductions for them? No. So you can say no all day long, but you're not being an effective communicator if you're not taking into consideration the ramifications of how you deliver that message. And these days, I mean, relationship building is absolutely essential. So that's the first thing to consider. As far as saying no in a way that communicates respect and really outlines your boundaries, when you're very clear on what you will accept and what you won't accept, it makes the process of what to say and how to say it so much easier. So like you said, Janine, in the beginning, you were like, yeah, take me here, take me there. You want me to speak to your dogs, like veterinarians, like, hello, yeah.
Find me up.
But when you decide that, okay, so for the next 6 months, I will take on 4 of these types of engagements. And when those engagements come up, then now you say to yourself, well, since I can only take on 4, if I decided to only take on 4, what's going to be my criteria to determine the 4 that I take on? Maybe it's the 4 that causes that I care about. Maybe it's for youth. One is for higher education. Maybe one is for women empowerment. And then when you get to that point, you basically say, so if someone's asking you to talk to the veterinarians or at the dog pound, you can say, you know, I'd love to do this. However, my focus is on these 4 main areas and just in a line. I mean, that's very clear. People can respect it. If you have something that is not as clear as that, and it's a time commitment or a boundary issue, and you're overcommitted, you can just say, I don't have the capacity for this right now. Maybe you could check back in 6 months, maybe next year. I just don't have the bandwidth. I don't have the capacity. I'm operating at full capacity. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else you'd like me to connect you with or refer you to? So when you turn someone away, think about how you could be helpful for them. Maybe you can't do it, but maybe you can provide them with something else. And I think that's really the whole thing to consider. Think about how you would feel when someone is turning you down. And if you can put in your mind that you want to be able to give the best rejections ever, you will stand out in the minds of other people, because people really don't like to hear no. But if you can say it in a way that honors who they are and shows them that you're genuine, you care about them without adding all the, I think I can do this, or this is just not all of that stuff. I don't think you have to go into so many details around any explanation at all. However, if, let's say, timing, if you commit to something and it's within 24 hours and you just say, I can't do this anymore, I think it's impolite for you not to provide any additional information as to why, because you're just showing respect for that other person's time. So,
yes, that's so good. And it's really good for people to understand about their boundaries, and that I love that, just, you know, how do you still respect the relationship, but also respect your boundaries at time? And then how do you communicate that clearly, which you're the coach to make sure we can do that. So that's a wonderful thing. There is a TED Talk that I love, and I hear it a lot by, I believe it's Dr. Laura Sekola, and she talks about executive presence, and she talks about how you show up in your executive presence and how your voice is. And I don't know if you remember this show with Franz Dresser called like The Nanny or something, like, hello, how are you? And she was like, that was a great voice for that character. But has she been trying to get voted in as the president? I don't know if that would have went over well with the people. So how do you advise people to have an executive presence?
Well, I don't really like that word, but it's a buzzword. People use it. And so we have to go with the flow, because a lot of people, they go through programs where they're building their executive presence and they feel, let's bring that word up that came up earlier, inauthentic. They feel as though they're having to shift their personality into something or someone that they're not really who they really are. And so that's where that word gets very problematic for me, because there's so many components around executive presence. My position and my thought is to help that individual identify their strengths and to use those strengths and maximize it, play their strengths up. Sure, definitely there are nonverbal mannerisms, nonverbal behaviors, positioning, and things like that. But if it doesn't align with the inner person, this is where the emotional intelligence comes in. But if it doesn't align with the inner person, they're going to burn out. They're going to feel like, you know what, my executive presence, I went to a coach, I work with someone, it's not working for me. Actually, I've had people come to me and say that very same thing, like, it's just not working for me. And I say, well, let's really think about how you can show your strengths in a way that honors you, but also communicates authority. So even reducing certain words like I think, or maybe, or perhaps, or probably, those are things that signal lower confidence. And people who want to be seen as more confident or be seen in that leadership role have more definitive language that they're using. So it could be some tweaks in vocabulary. As far as the voice is concerned, yeah, when you are bringing your vocal cord or vocal tone down and you're opening the airways to the back of the throat, it creates a more crisp sound. It creates a more authoritative sound. But I have seen that change a lot over the years, because people have become more receptive to higher pitches, not so much high pitch, but higher pitches. And you can look at the evolution of what that looks like, because in the past, when I studied journalism, when I did broadcast journalism, we were learning about the way that women in the workplace and women in authority needed to look, behave. You look at the, like, Hillary Clinton with the short hair, Madeleine Albright with the short hair. And these were basically a lot of characteristics that would mimic the look, style, and feel of a man, wearing the pantsuit, even with the dropping the lower cord voice, making sure that the hair is not out and looking playful or in a ponytail. so that you could be considered to be more serious. But we have evolved. We are evolving. People are much more open, and you see different colors, different styles in their dress. Executive presence is not a one size fits all. I would say it focuses on your ability to be aware of your strengths, ability to be mindful of global trends, your communication style, the timing, the language that you're using, and how to build influence, how to build relationships with others. So for me, that's where it starts and that's where it ends.
And that's great, because we could even be biased with the term executive presence, because really to have executive presence is, like you said, being self-aware of where your strengths are. Like, where are you executing? And you're the executive. And for me to really understand, because I actually grew up with a stutter impediment, I still have a stutter. And so speech, my speech development has been a long road, but understanding where my strengths were and what I needed to do to speak clearly, and my music background helped. And that's another thing I want to get your thoughts on. How do you think the arts, either musically or with theater, improvisation, breathing, right? How do, I don't know if you have an arts background, but how do you think the arts play a part? Because that's a lot of part of my research of really advocating for arts education, not because people need to be professional artists. If they choose to go that route, that's great. But because of all these other areas, how do the arts support what you're doing with people as far as the clear communication?
It's absolutely essential. It ties in 100%, because otherwise we're just robots. We're robots following a boring, mundane, dry pattern. We're not tapping into our creativity. We're not tapping into the inner child or making things fun. So the arts, yes, it's extremely important. You think about colors, you think about sounds. The way we respond to communication is not even just words or nonverbal behavior. You can play a song and communicate something so powerfully that it moves you to tears or changes your state, raises your vibration. So the arts is absolutely essential in terms of effective communication, because you now have multiple modalities and ways of connecting and communicating with others and even with yourself.
Very true. Very true. And I tell people, you cannot be your creative best without that aspect. So we do define art creativity as, you know, the process of problem finding, problem solving with relevance value. There's novelty there, just, you know, the production of new ideas. And artistry can be a part of that. But a lot of people think they're not creative because they're not excellent in the arts. But at the same time, we do say here that while creativity isn't solely artistry, having some type of exposure and background and training in the arts helps your creative thinking and helps your communication. Someone pointed out to me, he's like, Janine, I love the way you speak. It's so musical.
It is.
I was like, she caught that. But I've been in music since the fourth grade. And so I know how to end my songs playing my instrument. So do I know how to end my phrases playing my voice?
You see, I took up piano. My mom put me in piano when I was young, and I got frustrated and I gave up. And I always say I wish that she had encouraged me and pushed me more to continue, because I would have loved to continue to play the piano. But one of my boys plays the piano. He loves it. It's so soothing. For me, I got into drama. I got into performing arts. I was in national competitions, and it brought me alive. So what I do today is actually a blend. When I get on stage, I get to get into character, Janine. Okay. I get to speak, and I get to bring the actress out too. So I love it. And I think it just allows us to get our message across. And when I work with women and I help them to uncover their story, which part of their story would connect with their audience, how do they want to use their story to help others? Sometimes we go through those processes of thinking like you're in a movie or a play and being able to connect with those parts of your story in a much more intimate way.
Yes, the data from Adam Grant, who wrote the book, How Nonconformists Move the World, he looked at the Nobel Prize winners in science from 1901 to 2005 or so, or 2001 or so. And he saw that the majority of them had sometimes an arts background, and you were 22 more times likely to win the Nobel Prize in science if they had a theater background.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, very even more than music, which I'm really big on the music aspect, and I see that all the data in the music and how it interacts with
science,
the brain.
Science and math, and yes.
Yes, but the theater, and so, yeah, it's just to really exercise a lot of these internal and sometimes invisible qualities through engaging in theater. Fascinating.
I love that you said that, invisible qualities. That's so powerful.
Yeah, well, because, you know, we learn all of these standards in school, but no one teaches you how to speak well, you know, unless you happen to take a debate class, which is what, like 1%. And no one teaches you the emotional connections that you get and how to speak. Just, you hear it in my voice, the dynamic fluctuation, the pitch fluctuation, the force, and then the release, all that I learned through my arts training.
That's so wonderful. I love the debate piece too, because I can relate to that. I can relate to that. And it just helps with the critical thinking portion too, because it's like, okay, we are used to having to pick a side that we don't agree with, finding ways to, I think that stimulates, helps you to see other perspectives. If you have to pick a side that you don't agree with and argue it, right? So.
And it opens up empathy in addition to perspective shifting. And it really makes you analyze things. So yeah, I love that. And I should try that more often, just personally. So let's get to this amazing book that you have. And I just love the title. I'm all about titles, like titles of songs and everything, and like the title of my life at this season. But your title of this book is Intentional Motherhood. Who said it would be easy? That has a question mark at the end. So I'm going to put a question mark there, a big question mark, right? Who said it would be easy? Oh, no, not that one. There we go. Who said it would be easy? What is this book about? And where was it 3 years ago when I had my son?
OMG, it wasn't even formed because it just came out last year. And it is really about the journey of setting boundaries, how to go from self-like to self-love, how to have intentional conversations, leaning into those intentional conversations, and redefining what our motherhood identity looks like. So it's birthed out of my experiences. I was a teen mom. I had my son very early, and I was the best teen mom you would find on the planet. And I'm not just saying that, but a few years after I had him, I was teaching parenting workshops to women who were twice my age on the university campus. And I was working and I was doing a couple of things, and I really didn't know, Janine, why things just kind of worked out for me that way. Until later on when I reflected and I realized that in chapter 2, it says, it's not about age, it's not about biology, it is about identity. So it's about how you see yourself. And I saw myself, I didn't see myself as handicapped because I had a kid when I was young. I saw myself as a mom who would provide the best learning experiences for my son. And so if you begin to see yourself in a certain way as a carer, as a nurturer, it doesn't matter if you are if you've birthed that child, it's not about age, it's not about biology, but it is about identity. The whole purpose about self-like to self-love is really around us going deeper, that emotional intelligence, that self-awareness, the things that we do that are on the top surface level when we are in like with ourselves. But when we really love ourselves, we are using boundaries. We're having patience. We're exercising gentleness. We're using self-control. And those are the things that help us to have the quality of life that we desire. When we get into motherhood, sometimes it's very reactive. It's not a proactive thinking. We plan for our kids. We plan for where they're going to go to school, maybe where we want them to go to daycare. We plan for vacations. We plan what job we want to get, do all this research. But when we become moms, it just happens, and we continue to move through life as though, okay, it's just one more thing to add on, and we do everything. And then we can't keep up. We feel frustrated, overwhelmed, and we're like, I'm failing. But You have to slow down, stop, and redefine what success looks like as you embrace the motherhood identity. So I talk a bit about that. I give some practical tips in chapter 4 for the working mom. I talk about intentional conversations, leaning into those conversations, setting time aside for conversations that most of us tend to avoid. Because when we lean away from conflict, that really doesn't help us to be effective as intentional mothers. So setting aside time, preparing, planning, it only helps us to keep the lines of communication open, strengthen our self-esteem, remove any type of negative energy that we're holding into our system, and communicate more effectively. And I also discuss the egoful father. There's a chapter in my book called The Egoful Father. And that is really talking about the men in our lives that are leading from their ego. So in that chapter, I dispel a lot of myths that men who are leading from their ego just don't care and they don't want to have a connection. And that's not the truth. I use my own dad as an example in that book. I talk about my journey, my experiences, meeting my dad when I was 8 years old and going through our ups and downs until where we are today, very connected. And I talk about the fact that society conditions the men to lead with their ego. And so it's not that they don't want to connect, they don't know how. But as intentional mothers, when we have more awareness, we can now choose how we want to navigate with those men in our lives and in our job, in our workplaces, who are leading from their ego. We can be more intentional about how we navigate those relationships and leverage our influence.
Ah, that is so good. And just to, that self-awareness piece is key. And then you said you stop to reflect. And there is a quote that I love from John Locke. He says, all great ideas and innovation comes from sensation and reflection. So being able to fully multi-sense your environment and your internal environment, and then being able to reflect upon that is key. And this is such good information for everyone, you know, even if you don't have children, but it's almost like relationship. If you have any type of relationship in your life, being aware of these elements is key. Yes?
Absolutely.
And looking at a quote that I love, I'm like the quote girl, if you haven't noticed, I have books on quotes in a minute, but there's a quote that says, and I'll put it up, the one thing life teaches you is how to let go. And you can look at this anyway, but as we are moms and leaders and children of people, life teaches us how to let go, even how to let go to the seasonal changes. I feel like once I get in the rhythm of things with my son, he's in a new bracket of development. I'm just like, we just got that part down and now he's moving on. How do you deal or help people with that concept of life is a constant change?
Yeah, I think acknowledging that first. So that would be beginning to shift our perspective or expectation. Like, where did we get the mindset from that it should be constant, or we should get it down and it shouldn't change? You know, like, to begin to think about, where did our own beliefs come from? How were we raised? Because we're borrowing beliefs from people around us. And to really begin to think about, okay, why do I believe that? Okay, why do I think that should happen? Why do I think that parenting should be easy? Why do I think parenting should be hard? Like, seriously. So for us to begin to think and question the beliefs that we hold, and explore where they come from. To be able to adapt and shift to change, it requires practice. So to reward yourself, think about the times when you have gone through your life and you made changes. You didn't die, right? You know, something happened, you didn't want to let go, but think about that and pull on to those times or these emotions that you had when you were going through a change, and bring that into that whole process, knowing that the kid can't stay five forever, right? So, and
it's true.
Getting around others, hearing stories. I think sharing our stories and hearing others' stories, it also helps us to embrace change more effectively. Look at this whole situation of the pandemic. If we thought that we were the only one that was suffering, or maybe gone through loss, or loss of whatever, life, jobs, experiencing any type of loss or grief, then it would be very difficult for us to embrace this change. But because we hear others' stories and we see what others are also experiencing, as we're navigating this change together, it makes it a little bit easier for us to move through the transition. So the storytelling piece is absolutely essential as we're going through the parenting journey.
Ah, that's so good. And I'm a big proponent of story because, you know, part of my background is looking at the neuroscience behind the way we operate, the way we create and interact with one another, especially people from different lived backgrounds. And to really have that empathy, that empathetic connection, story is always like a 99.9% the way to go. Mm-hmm. And even as educators and coaches and mentors, you know, emotion leads and then the content follows. Emotion leads and then the instruction follows and the logic follows. And people who know how to utilize story, and that's why I tell people, I'm glad I have my background in elementary ed, because you have to be a story. You know, you can't give a 2-hour lecture to 5-year-olds. It doesn't work that way. You have to be a storyteller, right? You have to know how to get their engagement, and you have to know how to pivot quick. Mm-hmm. And how to make those connections. One time I had a bee fly in my classroom during a math lesson. I can freak out because if I freak out, they freak out. But just how do you safely handle the situation and then use that connection to redirect them into where mm-hmm. you want to go? And that's just that quick thinking on the feet. Have you ever been a part of Toastmasters before?
I mean, I've visited, and I have definitely, when I taught public speaking at the university, one of the things that I encouraged them to do was to sign up for their local Toastmasters groups. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely familiar with the whole process. I love it. I recommend it. I think it's great to go through those technicalities and things like that. So, and even for building leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's an element in Toastmasters called table talks. Are you aware mm-hmm. of that?
Yes. Yes.
And if you know how important it is to speak with extra temperaneously. There's a long word that they use all that.
Yes.
Just to speak off the cuff.
Yes.
What tips do you have for people who are just going to find themselves in a situation where they have to either give a pitch or give an elevator pitch or they just have to answer a question that they've never prepared for and they have to speak off the cuff? What do you suggest?
So begin to expand your awareness. And so make it relatable. Whatever it is when you're answering something, you have to think of your audience. Put yourself in the audience shoe and make it relatable, which means that you're going to use similes or metaphors or connect it to something to help them cement it. It's like a staircase. They're looking cognitively for something that can help cement the point or their response. And then you can start to walk up that staircase. But if you just start responding and there's no connection, there's no relatability, there's no understanding, you're causing your audience to have to work too hard. But if you always think about how can you make it easy for them, so you can give an example, it's like going to the movies. You start off in the dark and when it's done, the light comes on. So people can automatically put themselves in a movie theater, right? So you use examples like that to help cement whatever the concept is that you're trying to get across in a shorter amount of time, because it's answering questions off the cuff. You're not in a keynote speech. You don't have the luxury of drawing out a story. You may have 1 to 3 minutes most to answer, and you want to be able to create those cognitive connections quickly for them to get some value out of it.
Ah, that's so good. And for me, I use imagery as well. So if I have that table talk or that prompt that I have to respond to, I start to see the pictures that could help me build that story. And also, like you said, knowing your audience. I just did a keynote for the Series Business Conference, which is primarily a salon and beauty industry conference. And I'm not a hairstylist, far from it. You know, I had to search high and low to find someone to do my hair in Phoenix, Arizona. But I did my research, and I also shared a story about an avocado. I call it the avocado story. And I wasn't going to share it in my keynote, but I did. And like 90% of people who walked up to me to say that they enjoyed the speech mentioned the avocado story.
Of course. That just
told me just the power mm-hmm. of that. And so I was just, you know, I didn't practice it or anything, but I knew it so well because I lived it. To share stories that you lived and that has that emotional, visceral reaction, mm-hmm. gold.
Yes, yes, you're great at that. I've heard you share your stories before. So it doesn't surprise me that they remember the avocado story.
If you want to hear it, come to one of my keynotes. Awesome. Awesome. So you are the Clear Communication Coach, and you also have these amazing books. You have another book as well. What is that book about? Or is it just
The Ultimate Speaker's Guide?
What is that book?
It is a resource for any new emerging or seasoned speaker, and it walks you through a combination of exercises that help you understand the importance of audience engagement. It helps you to understand, even from an emotional intelligence perspective, like, why am I even doing this? So by the time you go through those exercises and the activities, you're literally walking through an intense VIP private coaching session. So you will accelerate your speaking goals using the speaker's guide.
Very, very, very wonderful. We love tools. We love things that we can grab and actually implement today. And for people really to get their foundation for this next era, knowing how to communicate, whether you're extrovert, introvert, or mixture of both, or whether you're like me, even with a speech impediment or some type of speech issues that you may have had in your background, still taking the time to learn how to communicate effectively will be essential as people are needing to really show their uniqueness in their way. We're kind of moving away from the conforming companies, even whether you're an entrepreneur or within an organization, people want your unique ideas. So knowing how to communicate and get them across effectively will be gold. So people need to find you. If they needed to find you, Miss Monique, where should they go?
So you can get to me via my website, MoniqueRussell.com, or ClearCommunicationSolutions.com, or you can get me on LinkedIn, Clear Communication Coach, Monique Russell. And if all else fails, just type Monique Russell Coach in Google and I will pop up.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for spending time on the Create and Grow podcast. We know that if we want to create and grow, we're going to have to communicate while we're growing. And so I hope people really got some good gems. And our last question on here is, we are the gems. My logo is the diamond. And we believe that everyone deserves to shine bright and be in a place where they can shine bright and they're multifaceted and all that good stuff. But we ask our guests to end with a final gem that you want to leave with us.
The final gem is that it's never too late to start. So begin to cultivate that superpower, your intuition. If you felt that you were a poor communicator in the past, it doesn't matter. You can start today. Start small. You'll be able to continue to grow. And just know that perfection does not exist.
Thank you. Thank you so very much for that. Honored to have you on the show. We will have all the links in the show notes for people to reach out to you, find your book, and learn that communication is the way to go for their intercultural creativity. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, Janine.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to see how you are creative and how we are more creative when we work well together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com, where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to build a climate of inclusion and innovation. We have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our children's books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones. We thank you again for joining us and remind you to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.